Well, last week I ended the discussion with a thought-provoking question or thought. Who was the prodigal son? Who did that represent? And who did the elder son represent? Specifically, I got this idea from Kaufman. And what his idea was of the long-lost prodigal son that had left the father's household and been gone for a long time, and now God is ready to welcome, and not just exactly then, but he had been wanting this prodigal son, this wasteful son, to come back and into his household, and was rejoicing when he did. And then who was the older brother who was an ingrate? He did not want to accept this returning lost son. He did not like any part of it. He wanted the father to reject him, did not feel like that he was any longer worthy to be in the household. And so anyway, I left last week with that question, and Kay put her thinking cap on very quickly. And before we left the building last week, she had the problem solved. And Kaufman said the prodigal son was representative of the Gentiles that had left God during the patriarchal age after the flood. So somewhere between the flood and about Abraham, because there wasn't many righteous when Abraham was around already, and that was just in about 500 years or so. But God chose Abraham because he was righteous, and there wasn't all that. So most of, and of course Abraham was in the lineage of Shem. So it was Ham and Japheth's lineage were the majority of these Gentiles. And so they had left God. They were supposed to have stayed with the patriarchal system that God had set up since Adam and Seth. And the Gentiles were supposed to have been in that system all the way through, because they never were included in with the law of Moses and the Ten Commandments. They never were bound to that. That was only the Israelites. But they were supposed to have still been in this patriarchal system when Jesus came to earth. And then they would have gone from the patriarchal system to the Christian age. So the patriarchal age to the Christian age. But unfortunately, they went to paganism and idolatry and all kinds of other debauchery, which is reminiscent of what this prodigal son did. And then here we have the older son, representative of the Jews, the Israelites of that day of that Jesus was there, and what would be in the future, to where were they willing to and readily willing to accept the Gentiles into God's kingdom? No, not even the apostles. They did not. So here, this analogy works beautifully, and it's all here in this parable, but it's like no one ever picked up on it. The Israelites that Jesus was telling this to didn't pick up on it. 2,000 years? Yeah, I'd never heard this before. Even though Kaufman, and I read Clark, and he had this same thought. It was the last two small little paragraphs, and he said, also, this may be the meaning of this parable of the Gentiles versus the Jews. And so he had the same thought, and it might have been that Kaufman got this thought from Clark from the 1700s. But even the 12 apostles were thinking that God was going to bring the Gentiles into the kingdom. So here, when we get to Acts 10, there had been no Gentiles brought into God's kingdom. But now that was by God's design. He did it in his own time. But it came time to bring the Gentiles in, and this was the second key that Jesus gave to Peter when he said, I'm going to give you the keys to the kingdom. Well, this is the second one to unlock the kingdom to the Gentiles. And God had to give a vision to Peter three times for him to understand finally, oh, you are going to let the Gentiles into your kingdom. Well, okay, then he went full force, but then he had to go and tell the other 11 apostles about this. And, James had been executed at that time. So I think we were still at 12 at that point. So Paul had been included in that. Well, no, Paul is the next. No, Paul's after that. But it's all real close in there. But anyway, so he had to go back to the other apostles and tell them to convince them, yes, God is wanting and accepting the Gentiles in. Boy, of course, these Pharisees that had become Christians, and we read about it in Acts, there was stiff opposition everywhere they went. And then these who had been Pharisees and wanting to hold on to the law of Moses, these Gentiles are all going to have to be circumcised. You know, they wanted to bring them back in. And Paul had big fights on his hands and lots of controversy and arguments about this. So we can see that all plays out really nicely with this. So, but actually there are, and we've mentioned this before, but Kaufman has said in these parables of Jesus, they are very deep, multidimensional, and have multiple meanings. They're so deep you can't just hold them down to one meaning. So we're down to three views or meanings or understandings to this parable. Well, I'll say at least three. And this is the number one with the Gentiles versus the Jews. Number two is much more consistent with this, with the context, and it is probably exactly the point that Jesus is referring to with the context. And it starts off with Luke 15 verse 1. Then all the tax collectors and the sinners drew near to Jesus to hear him. And then the critical Pharisees and scribes, the older brother, complained saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them. So in this second understanding, Jesus would be the father that is bringing in the prodigal son, these tax collectors and sinners, and Jesus is eating with them. Obviously, Jesus knows their heart. These are repentant people, and he is preparing them for the next few months. And now, of course, now these are Jews here that Jesus is eating with, and they're in this land of Perea, Jewish territory. And so he is preparing them for the kingdom that's just a few months away. And then, of course, in this, then the Pharisees and the scribes would be the older brother that are saying, no, you're not bringing them. We're not dealing with them and being critical of the father of Jesus, of accepting these sinners. But obviously, they were repentant. Jesus knew their hearts. And so then the third, which is the teaching that I think I've heard every time I've ever heard this, this is the way that I've always heard. It's just generically to where it's any backslider, anyone who has been a Christian, but then they leave the faith. Their name was written in the Lamb's Book of Life, but it's been blotted out. They have left God's kingdom. And then they return. Now, The problem is with that is, well, now who's the older son then? Who is it that is saying, no, we're not taking you back? Now we can all kind of see that would happen, but hopefully that would be more of a minority. But I can also see how some people could be the older brother saying, well, no, they're not sincere. You know, I've seen this person too many times. You know, I've been around him for 20 years. They've been gone, and he's done too many bad things, and I don't believe him. So be like the prisoner's thought. The recidivism is very high, which the difference is definitely here. Jesus knows the hearts and minds of these tax collectors and sinners. And then the lesson for us is that we don't need to be this older brother. We need to take them for face value, because we can't look into the heart. That's not our job, so we don't have to worry about that. That's God's. God takes care of that on His own. So we need to watch out for that and not be the older son. So those are at least three of possible understandings of this parable, and this is the most well-known and maybe the most well-studied, and I'll go ahead and mention, misnamed parable. I think all three commentators said that it should not be the prodigal son. It should have been named the two lost sons. And so, because both of these are lost, and as we end up with this son, we will notice, where is this son? Is he inside the banquet hall with the son, and the father is imploring the older son to come in? So has he come in? No, Jesus leaves him. He's still outside. So he's leaving it to these Pharisees or scribes, or leaving it to the Israelites as a whole. Now, it's up to you. Are you going to stay outside, and then the banquet hall is representative of God's kingdom? Are you going to stay outside of our kingdom, or are you going to come in? And that's how it's left. He did not bring them in, because as Clark expounded upon, how did this actually go? Well, in reality, guess what? The older brother, the Jews, did not come into God's kingdom. Overwhelmingly, they stayed outside. They wanted no part of it, and God gave them 40 years, the one generation until 70 AD, and he brought the hammer down on them. And his patience was long enough, and his patience ran out. But they stayed outside of the banquet hall. Jesus implored and beckoned and pleaded with them for 40 years to come into his kingdom, and they refused. And so it's the two lost sons. It's not the one. One was repentant, and the other, unfortunately, was not. And so these three parables that we have, first, we have the lost sheep. Number two, the lost coin. And number three, the lost sons. And Clark also brought this out, where the value of each parable of what is lost is more and more valuable. First, you have 1 out of 100 sheep. So you have 1%, and that's what is lost. That's 1%. Then next, the woman has 10 coins. She lost one of them. Well, she lost 10%. So instead of 1%, now the value of the lost is 10%. And then now in the prodigal son, or the parable of the lost sons, you have 1 out of 2 that returns. And so that's 1/2. So the value goes from 1 out of 100, and then 1 out of 10, and 1 out of 2. So 10%, 1%, 10% to 50%. And I hadn't thought of that, so I thought that was an interesting point. And Kaufman in the past had mentioned about various parables that when Jesus would talk about parables back to back, And he would mention that there is a progressive tone to each one. It was elevating to another level. So probably this was not an accident that Jesus put it with 1 out of 100, 1 out of 10, and 1 out of 2. Put it in that order of increasing value of the lost. Any questions or comments on this?